Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm Lila.
I'm Leo. And tonight we're going to bring you some news and views.
Yeah, we didn't really get a chance to read that much news last night.
No, we didn't.
We had maybe two or three articles, but tonight we can't. We have a little bit of time. We don't have any guests. It's just us and you.
Yeah, so we're going to start off here with a couple of interesting articles.
What's that one right there?
Well, this okay. one, yeah, I just wanted to go. That one's good, but this is better. We'll go here.
NYPD stops and questions record-breaking 1,900 people a day?
Yeah. In 2010, when the New York Police Department broke its previous all-time high record for stop and frisks with a sensational 601,055 street stops, many frisk fans said there was no way New Yorker NYPers could top that in 2011. Coach Ray Kelly's dream team has just clinched another champion season, breaking the previous record by stopping and questioning an all-time high of 684,330 people.
Is that, that's per year?
Yeah, in 2011. A press time video from one police plaza showed a trio of triumphant beat cops sneaking up behind Kelly with a giant tub of Gatorade. And look out, Popeye. And, it's ridiculous. 684,330 frisks and stops. You know. According to records obtained by Wall Street Journal, only 12% of 684,330 people stopped, were arrested, or received summonses. The others were not charged. In 2010, 14% were arrested. The NYCLU says that more than 4 million people have been stopped since the program began in 2004. The fifth millionth person stopped gets a complimentary foot-long hoagie. In 2010, about 84% of those stopped by police were black or Latino, while only about 9% of the people stopped were white. Last year, the racial breakdown kept on that trend at 87% black or Latino and 9% were white.
But homicides were down 4% in 2011. And NYPD spokesman Paul Brown tells the Journal, stops save lives. Brown argues that 8,263 weapons, including 819 guns, recovered as a result of stops. But NYCLU Director Donna Lieberman says the NYPD has cut off oversight in important questions by saying crime is down. Crime rates were going down before the skyrocketing stop and frisk campaign. Once again, we see a massive expenditure of resources for a tactic that fails to uncover criminal activity in all but a little more than 10% of the cases.
Yeah, this is, that's unconstitutional.
Well, I think so.
You stop a guy and frisk him, you know?
I don't think that's right.
Warrant,
I don't think that's
any,
right.
No, I mean, you know, it's absurd.
And they're targeting, you know, black people and Hispanics, and that's not right.
No, it's not. And I just lost that for some reason.
Because you X'd it out.
I didn't want to X'd it out, but I did X'd it out. Wait a minute.
That isn't what you want.
No.
Go over to favorites.
Okay. I'm going to go back up and go back to the thing. Oh, I hate computers, you know. So much easier when I just printed them.
Yeah, in some ways it was.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, in some ways it was.
Anyway, get back up here and just kind of get my system to keep going here. There you go. And next article is...
The tragic story... This is interesting. The tragic story of Christianity. How a pacifist religion was hijacked by rabid, warmongering elites. From time to time, I read about condemnations of religion coming from non-religious groups, especially concerning the all-too-common violence perpetrated in the name of a religious gods. Indeed, there is plenty to condemn. Although too many religious sects of both major and minor religions, despite verbally professing a desire for peace and justice in the world, are actually pro-war, pro-homicide, and pro-violence in practice. Or they may be silent on the subject, which is, according to moral theology, the same as being pro-violence.
Right. And,
yeah, poor God, all these religions race into war, crying his name.
He was the first one to bitch about it.
Didn't get the story there.
Yeah. Everything is so tough with this. Boobs. It's coming. Alright. Oh, boy.
Oh, it'll come. You just did it too early.
There it comes. Eventually. Sorry, I'm trying to bring this article up here, folks, and I guess it's
there it is. Okay. Obvious examples of violence include those portions of three major war justifying religions of the world, fundamentalist Islam, fundamentalist Judaism, and fundamentalist Christianity. I use the term fundamentalist in the sense that the religious person who ascribes to a fundamentalist point of view believes, among other dogmatic beliefs, that their scriptures are inherent, and thus they can find passages in their holy books that justify homicidal violence against their perceived or fingered enemies, while simultaneously ignoring the numerous contradictory passages that forbid violence and homicide and instead prescribe love, hospitality, mercy, forgiveness, and reconciliation. Behind the scenes, of course, there are hidden elites, amoral, politically, and financially motivated operatives who are embedded in these religious organizations, who through the strength of their political power, can easily manipulate the followers into clamoring for war, not against their enemies, but rather against the enemies of the ruling elites, the politicians, the financiers, and the exploiters of natural resources. And so nonviolent portions of the various religions, and they are there, albeit often hidden and censored, can be erroneously painted with the same brush that justifiably condemns the hypocrisy and the violence. It is certainly true that the Catholic Church endorsed and or orchestrated the genocide of the Crusades, the Inquisition, and many wars of colonization and exploitation, with the origins of those atrocities in fundamentalist interpretations of Holy Scripture. But I do have to take exception to the blanket condemnation of the entirety of the religion by pointing out one reality, that the original form of Christianity, the church of the first generation after Jesus, and even most of the first three centuries, where it was a religion of pacifists, oppressed women, orphans, those forced into prostitution, despised people of all stripes, and others of those called the least. Though this history has long been forgotten or ignored, the earliest followers of Jesus rejected violence, tried to return good for evil, fed the hungry, did acts of mercy and unconditional love, and tried to make friends out of their enemies by caring for them, feeding them, praying for them, and certainly refusing to kill them or paying for somebody else to kill them. It was a hugely successful ethical stance to take. It could be described as an act of divine genius, and it made tremendous practical sense. One bit of evidence of the practicality of gospel nonviolence is the fact that in the first couple of centuries, no early Christian male ever acquired combat-inducted stress or the soul destruction that always accompanies that reality. No early Christian ever felt depressed, ashamed, guilty, or suicidal about killing, pummeling, or raping innocent, unarmed women and children in wartime. The earliest Christians took seriously Jesus' clear command to love and befriend their enemy, and despite brutal Roman persecution, the religion survived. Indeed, it thrived. In fact, by 300 CE, it had grown into one of the largest religions in the empire, at which point the Emperor Constantine, who was a worshiper of the sun god until his deathbed baptism into the faith, co-opted the church by stopping the persecutions and granting it power, property, and prestige, thus seducing it into becoming the obedient and increasingly dependent state church whose master was the brutal, often satanic Roman Empire and its many generals.
There you go, folks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's another page on that, but there's quite a few pages.
Yeah. So you want to continue this? No,
I think we just should tell people.
Go to this one, alternate.com, and we'll get you there.
The Tragic Story of Christianity, How a Pacifist Religion Was Hijacked by Rabid Warmonging Elites.
Yeah.
So it started with Constantine.
Yep.
When it became the state church.
And I'm going to go on here. There was this got my eye, and North Carolina preschooler, unhealthy lunch replaced with cafeteria nuggets. A Hope County preschooler was fed chicken nuggets for lunch because a state worker felt that her homemade lunch did not have enough nutritional value, according to a report at the Carolina Journal. The West Hope Elementary School student was in her more. I don't know what that is. At four classroom.
What's in her more? Maybe that's the name of the
name of the class, I guess.
Yeah.
More at four, when a state employee who was inspecting lunch boxes decided that her packed lunch, which consisted of a turkey and cheese sandwich, a banana, apple juice, and potato chips, did not meet U.S. Department of Agriculture guidelines. I mean, what a complete asshole to do that. What a complete asshole job, you know? But
I think they have the right to inspect school lunches, but if somebody's bringing their own lunch from home, it's none of their business.
Why do they have the right to inspect school lunches?
Because they pay for them. The government subsidized.
Oh, the school lunches, yeah. But
that's provided.
Yeah.
Not when someone provides their own lunch,
yeah.
Their parents provide
it.
That's their business.
Yeah, that I understand. Okay, so anyway, let's get done.
What happened with that?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
It did not meet U.S. standards.
Right.
The decision was made under consideration of a regulation put in place by the Division of Child Development and Early Education at the Department of Health and Human Services, which requires all lunches served in pre-kindergarten programs to meet USDA guidelines. When home pack lunches do not include all the required items, child care providers must supplement them with the missing ones, the journal reports.
Chicken McNuggets?
The student's mother told the journal she received a note from the school about the incident and was charged $1.25 for the cafeteria tray for which her daughter ate three chicken nuggets. The note explained how students who do not bring healthy lunches would be offered the missing portions and parents could be charged for the cost of the cafeteria food, the journal reports. The mother, who is not identified in the report, expressed concern about school officials telling her daughter that she wasn't packing her lunchbox properly.
I mean, I would want to sue that school for being such assholes. That's ridiculous. It's total absurdity. You're gonna get absurd. Well, this one beats the cake. I tell you that. anything on Fox News beats, you know, is ludicrous. Fox pundit says women in the military should expect to be raped.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. The Pentagon announced new rules last week, easing the ban on women serving in combat. While conservatives like Rick Santorum are a little uneasy with the news, the announcement only formalizes military practices that are already taking place. The Fox News contributor Liz Trotta's commentary on the matter took the issue to a whole other level. She's not really concerned about the controversy surrounding the Pentagon's announcement. For Trotta, the issue is having women once more, the feminists going, wanting to be warriors and victims at the same time. She cited a recent Pentagon report that violent sex crimes in the military have increased over the last 6 years and said women should expect it, decrying more levels of bureaucracy to support women who have been raped too much. God almighty.
Well, maybe what she's trying to do is alert the women?
No, what she's doing is she's trying to say that they don't want to. She's saying there shouldn't be any more regulation.
Well, let's find out what else.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any more regulation.
Trotta, but while all of this is going on, just a few weeks ago, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta commented on a new Pentagon report on sexual abuse in the military. I think they've actually discovered there is a difference between men and women. And the sexual abuse report says that there has been, since 2006, a 64% increase in violent sexual assaults. Now, what did they expect? These people are in close contact. The whole airing of the issue has never been done by Congress. It's strictly been a question of pressure from the feminists. And the feminists have also directed them, really, to spend a lot of money. They have sexual counselors all over the place, victims' advocates, and sexual response coordinators. So you have this whole bureaucracy upon bureaucracy being built up with all kinds of levels of people to support women in the military who are now being raped too much. Raped too much? What does that mean?
This is stupid. To his credit, Fox host Eric Shaw tried to talk Trotta down a bit. You certainly want the people fighting the war to be protected from anything that could be illegal, he said, but Trotta wouldn't have it. Nice try, Eric, she said. The whole question of women in the military has not been aired properly, and it's a great sleeping giant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and just to clarify, Trotta complained about government supporting women who have been raped too much. A statement seeming to imply that there is an acceptable amount of rape one can or should endure in order to prevent more layers of bureaucracy from swooping in to help out.
Oh, my God, and this is a woman saying
that. Yeah, Fox News is one.
Where do they get these people?
They dredge them up from the lowest levels of society, I swear to God. Judge Napolitano got fired, okay, because he was talking out too much.
Well, what did he say?
Well, he said a lot of stuff. That's based on his last show.
How did he get fired in under 5 minutes? Let's watch that.
Okay.
Participation in a process that validates an establishment that never meaningfully changes. What if that establishment doesn't want and doesn't have the consent of the governed? What if the two-party system was actually a mechanism used to limit so-called public opinion? What if there were more than two sides to every issue, but the two parties wanted to box you into a corner, one of their corners? What if there's no such thing as public opinion, because every thinking person has opinions that are uniquely his own? What if what we call public opinion was just a manufactured narrative that makes it easier to convince people that if their views are different, then there's something wrong with that, or there's something wrong with them? What if the whole purpose of the Democratic and Republican parties was not to expand voters' choices, but to limit them? What if the widely perceived differences between the two parties was just an illusion? What if the heart of the government policy remains the same, no matter who's in the White House? What if the heart of government policy remains the same no matter what the people want? What if those vaunted differences between Democrat and Republican were actually just minor disagreements? What if both parties just want power and are willing to have young people fight meaningless wars in order to enhance that power? What if both parties continue to fight the war on drugs just to give bureaucrats and cops bigger budgets and more jobs? What if government policies didn't change when government leaders did? What if no matter who won an election, government stayed the same? What if government was really a revolving door for political hacks bent on exploiting the people once they're in charge? What if both parties supported welfare, war, debt, bailouts, and big government? What if the rhetoric that candidates displayed on the campaign trail was dumped after electoral victory? What if Barack Obama campaigned as an anti-war, pro-civil liberties candidate and then waged senseless wars while assaulting your rights that the Constitution is supposed to protect? What if George W. Bush campaigned on a platform of non-intervention and small government and then waged a foreign policy of muscular military intervention and a domestic policy of vast government borrowing and growth? What if Bill Clinton declared that the era of big government was over, but actually just convinced Republicans like Newt Gingrich that they can get what they want out of big government too? What if the Republicans went along with it? What if Ronald Reagan spent 6 years running for president, promising to shrink the government, but then the government grew while he was in the White House? What if, notwithstanding Reagan's ideas and cheerfulness and libertarian rhetoric, there really was no Reagan revolution at all? What if all this is happening again? What if Rick Santorum is being embraced by voters who want small government, even though Senator Santorum voted for the Patriot Act, for an expansion of Medicare, and for raising the debt ceiling by trillions of dollars? What if Mitt Romney is being embraced by voters who want anyone but Barack Obama, but they don't realize that Mitt Romney might as well be Barack Obama on everything from warfare to welfare? What if Ron Paul is being ignored by the media, not because, as it claims, he's unappealing or unelectable, but because he doesn't fit into the pre-manufactured public opinion mold used by the establishment to pigeonhole the electorate and create the so-called narrative that drives media coverage of elections? What if the biggest difference between most candidates was not substance, but style? What if those stylistic differences were packaged as substantive ones to reinforce the illusion of a difference between Democrats and Republicans? What if Mitt Romney wins and ends up continuing most of the same policies that Barack Obama promoted? What if Barack Obama's policies, too, are merely extensions of those from George W. Bush? What if a government that manipulated us could be fired? What if a government that lacked the true and knowing consent of the governed could be dismissed? What if it were possible to have a real game changer? What if we need a Ron Paul to preserve and protect our freedoms from the government? What if we could make elections matter again? What if we could do something about this? From New York, defending freedom every night of the week.
And he was fired.
He was fired after that one. And,
great. What he said was true.
He was the only guy on Fox News that makes any sense.
And of course they fired him. They prefer the woman who thinks that raping people, women, is all right in the military.
Fox News has an agenda. That agenda is to promote stupidity. And it does a very
good job. And globalism.
It does a very good job at that. I don't really know if I understand this, but maybe I shouldn't.
Empire Strike, is that what they mean? Family of Insider warns the family of EMP strike on U.S. this year.
I don't
know what EMP is short for.
I don't know. The article just says EMP. It doesn't really
define what it is. Let's go to the main article and see if
I hate stupid ass articles that do that, but. But, I mean, it got my attention, but,
And mine, too. Let's see if we can find out.
Hang on a second.
This is by Zen Gardner.
He's kind of a loony thing. Electromagnetic pulse.
That's what that is.
Yeah, but... I'm going to skip this because he's kind of a loony tune. All right?
Okay.
And,
Senate Republicans want to force the unemployed to work for free.
Yeah, they want to give them. They want the unemployed people to volunteer for 20 hours a week doing bullshit work. A Republican proposal.
This is from Alternate by Laura Clausen. Let's see. In recent months, Florida and South Carolina... Florida and South Carolina have talked about forcing people to volunteer for their unemployment insurance benefits, only to be told it was against federal law. Now, Senate Republicans want to change federal law to allow states to pass such laws, but to require all long-term unemployed people fund the volunteer 20 hours a week to continue receiving benefits, with an additional bill introduced by North Carolina's Richard Burr calling them to spend 20 hours a week looking for work. Those requirements could be added to Republican efforts to allow drug testing requirements and to deny unemployment insurance to people who don't have high school diplomas.
Yeah, imagine.
The number of job seekers for every available job just dipped below 4-1 for the first time in nearly 3 years. There are simply no jobs for more than 2 out of 3 people looking for jobs. Job seekers receiving unemployment insurance benefits spend more time looking for work and are more likely to have looked for work. So 5 out of 6 different methods that people not receive than people not receiving benefits. A law requiring them to spend 20 hours a week looking for work is nothing but an insult to people who are already searching desperately. Making it a requirement would likely add a reporting burden that would either detract from their search or force them to spend time beyond their active job searching. Forcing them to spend 20 hours a week volunteering additionally takes time people need for the very hard work of keeping their heads above water on a limited means. And, of course, creating an involuntary volunteer workforce is of no kind of job incentive. Why would any organization being provided free labor by the government even create a job?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why would they bother?
There are basically two reasons for measures like this. First, this proposal is very much about welfareizing federal unemployment insurance benefits, said George Wentworth, a senior staff attorney with the National Employment Law Project of Work.
You've already paid for unemployment. I mean, paid for it.
Well, these assholes think that, you know, anything, is a gift. That is, it reframes unemployment benefits as something other than an insurance program that exists for all of us and that we work for. So, second, such measures simply punish the stigmatized people for being jobless at a time when there simply are not jobs in the economy for them, because Republicans are mean-spirited like that. And so that's essentially what that says.
Huh.
So, you know, you can go from there, hopes. Let's see. There was a couple other big items that I wanted to see here.
Pentagon wants $3 billion for the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
We thought it was over. They declared it over.
They want another $2.9 billion for them. And, you know, and we don't have any troops there now. Or we're not supposed
to
have any.
We're told we don't have any.
Yeah. This is by Ukrnet Info, February 14th. The American public has been told that the Iraq war is a thing of the past. Even still, the U.S. Department of Defense is asking the federal government for almost $3 billion for activities in a country that they shouldn't be in. The last U.S. troops were supposedly withdrawn from Iraq just before 2012 began. But after years of war that abruptly ended the past December, the Pentagon still wants billions to continue doing something in Iraq. According to the latest budget request, the DOD thinks about $2.9 billion should cover the cost of Pentagon operations New Dawn, Iraq activities.
I wonder what that means.
Well, New Dawn was the name of their idiot war.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In a report published Monday by Wired acknowledged that the funding that the Pentagon wants now is almost as bizarre as the war itself. For nearly $3 billion, DoD says that will be able to afford finalizing transitions from Iraq.
I thought we did that.
Yeah.
Only 2 months earlier, however, President Obama celebrated the end of the Iraqi mission. At the same time, some critics called the ending of the war as more of a catapult for Obama's reelection campaign than anything else. Now, with the revelation that the U.S. Defense Department still wants billions for a war America's told it isn't fighting, the alleged ending of the Operation New Dawn seems just as questionable as its mysterious beginning. After ending the war last year, the U.S. government handed Iraqi operations over to the State Department. $3 billion, the amount that the DOD wants for the war they aren't waging, makes up about one-ninth of the State Department's entire annual budget. In 2012, the Pentagon had asked for $11 billion to fight the war in Iraq, which was, at the time, an actual war. But as the death toll stands at over 4,000 U.S. casualties after nearly 8 years overseas, it is clear by the latest cash request that the U.S., as many had expected but had not hoped, is not ready to just walk away just yet. On the bright side, it might be easier to foot the cost of this make-believe war than you would think. Suspiciously, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction announced in January that upwards of $2 billion that the U.S. was holding onto for Iraq had mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Over $25 billion is completely missing from there.
Yeah. All and right. I wonder whose pockets that's in.
Congress. And,
yeah.
And their cronies.
And their cronies.
And others in Iraq.
That's how they become instant billionaires.
This is interesting, and the reason I wanted to mention this is because we know somebody who actually is one of these people. And U.S. funds NGOs to fuel chaos, an Egyptian minister. That was what happened to
one of our friends. One of our friends had to come back.
Yeah, an Egyptian cabinet minister has alleged that the U.S. sponsored non-governmental organizations in an effort to manipulate them as platforms to incite turmoil in the post-revolution Egypt, report says. Say, on Tuesday, Egyptian state media cited International Cooperation Minister Fiaza about Naga as Abu Naga as making the remarks at a court proceeding 4 months ago, which investigated allegations that NGOs, or non-governmental organizations, used foreign funds to create chaos in Egypt amid the ouster of former dictator Mubarak in February 2011. Abu Naga has been in charge of dealing with the foreign group's activities in Egypt. Last week, 43 employees of nonprofit groups, including at least 16 Americans, were referred to an Egyptian court of law trial.
Court of law trial.
Yeah, I lost my place here.
The U.S. has threatened Egypt to cease its USD $1.5 billion annual aid to the country unless the case is settled. Last week, the Egyptians marked the first anniversary of their revolution as tens of thousands of people took to the streets across the country to protest against military rulers who took power following the mass protests that toppled the U.S.-backed Egyptian dictator. The Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, which seized control after the ouster of Mubarak's regime last February, has failed to meet a deadline it has announced to hand over the power after the president-elect later this year. So.
Yeah, it's a brief article, but they've held this many people and sent out arrest warrants for Americans who were working for these NGOs.
I don't know whether all of those NGOs are fronts or just some of them. I have no
idea. Most of them are.
That's what we've heard, but I don't know.
Fronts.
Some of the people that work there don't even realize that.
Yeah. This is true. The Iranian embassy in Ankara has categorically rejected Tel Aviv's allegation that Tehran was involved in recent attacks on Israeli embassy staff in Georgia and India, calling the Israeli regime source of terror. In a statement issued on Tuesday, Iran's embassy said that the Israeli regime sees its illegitimate life contingent on conducting acts of terror and seeking dangerous adventurism. The Islamic Republic of Iran considers the Zionist regime of Israel and its supporters as the main suspects in a terrorist attack in New Delhi and Tbilisi on Monday, and holding Iran accountable for the recent assaults is groundless, the statement added. And, the Israelis always do this. This false flag stuff is always, they perfected it. Oh, do you know that Menachem Begin actually was the first to use a car bomb?
Really?
Actually, a truck bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Suicide bomb kind of thing where they use the truck bombs. Menachem Begin was a Israeli terrorist. Hang on one second, folks. We'll get more of this.
It takes a minute for these articles to come up, so you have to be a little patient with us.
May not go to this one.
It's taking too long. It takes forever.
Yeah.
Let's go to...
Okay.
I like this. It's good to remember problem, reaction, solution, because it comes over and over again.
Yeah, but this is something different.
The Israelis create a problem, like a bomb, then you have the reaction, and then you get the solution for it that's already been predetermined, an invasion. Global media promotes theory.
I've got a few health articles I wanted to bring up anyway tonight, so I'd like to read this one. Detroit columnist calls for sterilants in drinking water to curb poverty numbers.
Oh, boy, doesn't that sound like eugenics?
Yeah, it is. It's all eugenics. Water fluoridation is always just a gateway for a greater drugging of society. The Detroit News has published a call to add contraceptives to the water supply, a dangerous and repugnant proposal for gross state power over life and death, all in the name of fighting the breeding poverty of the welfare class, editorial page editor Nolan Finley writes. And since the national attention is on birth control, here's my idea. If we want to fight poverty, reduce violent crime, and bring down our embarrassing dropout rate, we should swap contraceptives for fluoride in Michigan's drinking water. Now, this guy gets published in a newspaper.
Yeah. You know? Well, because he's got a globalist eugenics agenda.
That's exactly right. And
this is from Infowars.com.
And, it's like Bill Gates owns, all kinds of stuff and is trying to kill people with Merck. He's involved with Merck. He's involved with Monsanto. He's involved with everybody. This arrogant proposal, straight from that classic eugenics model, will not curb the dependency in the welfare class. Instead, if implemented, it could cause a spike in the cancer rate. Exacerbate the presence of gender-bending compounds in our common provisions, and all while serving to legitimize nanny state control over all of us, not just those taking handouts or breeding irresponsibly. In the first sense, Finley is airing class warfare arguments designed to play off segments of society under a larger climate of anger about the economic crisis for the socialistic takeover under Obamacare. No doubt Detroit is plagued with problems, but this proposal is an elitist problem, all right, reaction, solution ploy, aptly geared at drawing ire from its readers about paying out the dole to the undeserving, all while instead cheering for their own destruction via drugging the water supply. It's so typical of people, you know. In a few years, birth control and other hormonal disruptors are already in the water and causing problems. A read that? A few years ago, investigations of Associated Press and others underscored a little talked about problem. Hundreds of different pharmaceutical and modern chemical compounds are already inadvertently polluting our drinking water. Runoff and toilet-to-tap systems allow excreted and disposed pharmaceuticals and pills of all sorts to enter right back into our water supply. These dangerous compounds are affecting all strata of society, from wealthy, responsible families on down. And even if targeting the dependent class was morally acceptable and desirable, there's no way to limit the exposure.
Toxic and gender-bending hormonal endocrine disruptors are destroying the environment and triggering cancer and other health problems. Spikes in prostate cancer, breast cancer, thyroid problems, and more are attributed to these chemicals, even as much of the media tries to play down the effects as being at safe levels. Some ludicrously act as if turning a blind eye to hormonal pollution will make it go away.
And instead, these artificial sex hormones, along with known carcinogens like arsenic, uranium, radium, and tetrachloroethylene.
Whatever that is. It sounds like gas or something.
Not only violate the Safe Drinking Water Act, but coincide with increased reports of intersex animals that live in or near the water, male alligators with undersized penises, male fish that produce eggs as well as sperm, and male seabirds with female trait.
As Susan Kim at Huffington Post writes,
Detroit,
op-ed,
just regurgitating long espoused coercive population control measures.
The Detroit News' Nolan Finley is not presenting original ideas. Proposals to add sterilants to the water are not new. Instead, they are long-standing calls from eugenicists for covert mass sterilization. And this article gives reason to believe these poisonous ideas are gaining acceptance among sheep-like and deeply divided population turned against itself. Current White House science advisor John P. Holdren co-wrote the 1977 textbook, Echo Science, which lays out in a detail a wide array of coercive voluntary submission population control methods. One of the most drastic is that of adding a sterilant to drinking water or staple food. Other drastic proposals include starving the poor by consolidating the global food supply and depriving nations who don't meet population reduction goals of proportionate food rations. Putting sterilants in the water, though, dates back further to a 1969 memo sent in private from Planned Parenthood VP Frederick S. Jaffe to the Rockefeller-created Population Council's president, Bernard Berelson. It advocated drastic coercive measures, including fertility control agents and water supply, and encouraged increased homosexuality. But much of the one-page memo also aimed to dangle state benefits over expectant mothers to encourage abortions, sterilization, and birth control through payments, tax credits, and public housing policies. There's no doubt the racist tinge in this language, just as in the current editorial aimed at Detroit's large minority populations.
This goes pretty far.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to read the top of it. The third part is it's about scapegoating the poor and dependent classes, not the root cause. Classical eugenics.
In vogue again.
Exactly. And so that's what we're really dealing with here. Right? Especially when you got a eugenicist put in the charge as a czar.
Yeah.
Science czar in the Obama White House. So that tells you what Obama's really all about. We've got about 15 minutes. I've got a few more articles. talking about, we were talking last night to James Otto, who had filed a lawsuit against a healthcare company for importing, insourcing jobs from outside the country to basically firing 500 American workers and replacing them with Indian workers.
And actually, they
from India paying them a third of, or no, paying them about a third of the wages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like this is.
And then after 3 years, they can become citizens. I wanted to say,
and they don't.
I wanted to say, did that they get the advantage then of not being employed?
Exactly.
Do they get the benefit of being Americans and
then
kicked out of their job?
Exactly. So.
And go on welfare.
Right. So this is so. Obama speaks out about insourcing jobs, which I was very surprised. I'm bringing manufacturing jobs back to America to help restore middle-class security and calls for changing our tax code to stop rewarding businesses that ship jobs overseas and start rewarding companies like Master Lock that create jobs here in America.
Well, I hope he has some influence.
Let's just, if you want to hear that, we can listen to that. Let's see if we can hear that.
I want my workers!
It's 25 minutes, and I really didn't edit this, so I don't know how long it is. But just know that that's what his plans are, which are good.
Well, I hope that the unions back that and that they put pressure on him to do something about it.
I would hope so. Cannabis compound, cannabidiol, or CBD, halts cancer and brings, it says relive.
Relief.
No, it says relive to many other illnesses.
Well, they mean.
Maybe relief, but I didn't relive. I don't know.
Not even a word.
Oh. All right. Hang on 1 second here. A compound in cannabis may stop breast cancer spreading through the body. And a second news report, a new cancer treatment for a natural plant compound. Cannabis-based treatment for cancer patients should never be used in place of traditional cancer treatments, but used in conjunction with a traditional medical form.
When people are taking chemotherapy, it keeps them from being nauseous and sick.
I'm going to skip this. You know what? Because,
it's kind of disorganized.
Yeah, probably written by a pothead. Go on from there. This one here is interesting because this affects everybody, and it's regarding, and it's from naturalnews.com, and says here, compact fluorescent bulbs release cancer-causing chemicals when turned on, says new research. All right, so those twisty bulbs that you get now that supposedly last for 5 years.
Yeah.
All right. They cause.
They might last for 5 years, but you'll be dead.
Yeah, but they cause cancer the minute you turn them on. And we got a bunch of those in our house here because I didn't know this till now. Are you one of the many who, in the effort to be eco-friendly and to save money, replaced your old incandescent light bulbs with environmentally friendly compact fluorescent lamps, energy-saving light bulbs? If so, beware. A new study conducted by Peter Brom at Berlin, Germany, laboratory, found that these light bulbs contain poisonous carcinogens that could cause cancer. These include
phenol, naphthalene, and stearine.
Phenol is a mildly acidic, toxic, white crystalline solid obtained from coal tar and used in chemical manufacture. Naphthalene is a volatile white crystalline compound produced by the distillation of coal tar, used in mothballs and as a raw material for chemical manufacture. All right. A saturated liquid carbohydrate, styrene, obtained as a petroleum byproduct. A German scientist involved caution to keep these light bulbs as far away as possible from human environment. If used, they advise that you use the bulbs sparingly. in areas with good ventilation and definitely not in the proximity of the head. First, we got one right over the bed. All right, so we got to take that out. All right, as the bulbs generate electrical smog impacting human health. The new German study supports similarly disturbing findings of Abraham Helms, a professor of biology in Haifa University in Israel, who found that the light emitted by CFLs increased the likelihood of women getting breast cancer by disrupting the body's production of the hormone melatonin. What a dilemma for Americans. Following a 2007 bill signed into law by George W. Bush, the U.S. government will ban the sale of 100-watt traditional incandescent bulbs and replace them with toxic by January 1st, 2012. We're already into that now. Followed by a 70-watt version, a 5-watt version in 2013,
Europe,
and 60 and 40-watt bulbs by 2014. This will follow on the heels of the Europeans, who began to phase out incandescent bulbs in 2009, and by 2016, the EU also plans to ban halogen
bulbs,
forcing people to use compact fluorescents. The legislation pits the lawmakers against environmental groups that strongly back the new standards, states USA Today, which requires manufacturers to produce bulbs that use 25 to 30% less energy than standard incandescents. The CFLs are harmful. That CFLs are harmful is not new information. It is well known that they contain toxic mercury, a neurotoxin that can damage the brain, liver, and kidneys, and central nervous system, and the bulbs are marketed as safe as long as the glass remains intact. The danger comes, reports Fox News, if the bulb is cracked, broken, or not disposed of properly, causing the toxic dust to spread into the air. Just one fluorescent light bulb contains enough mercury to contaminate 6,000 gallons of water.
Oh my God.
And humans to impair motor function, functioning, cognitive ability, and emotional stability. Moreover, the dirty energy emitted by CFLs produce radiation that has been linked with migraine headaches, sleep abnormalities, fatigue, and other health defects, while the flickering of fluorescent bulbs causes dizziness, headaches, weakness, and illness in some sensitive people. So, we should get rid of our bulbs, Lila.
Yeah.
So we got to get rid of those now. Yeah. You can go to 75 watt normal.
Yeah, certainly in a couple of places you could get rid of them.
I would think the bedroom.
Yeah. And downstairs by where you read.
And downstairs where I read, yeah.
And I'm trying to think, we don't have that many, really, Leo.
We got at least three or four of them in here. This one is it's a little too long to play, unfortunately. Texas now requires meningitis vaccine for all college students. Incredible, huh? I was surprised when I read this because, again, goddamn Perry and his mandates for vaccinations, because he's in cahoots with Merck and all these other vaccination companies, Gardasil.
Yeah.
What a piece of work he is.
Oh, he's just a horrible person.
I'm glad nobody hears from him anymore. Let's see. Natural news, like I said, Texas now requiring meningitis vaccinations for all college students. Former presidential candidate Texas Governor Rick Perry has signed into law a new legislation that requires all college students, including those living off campus, to get injected with a meningitis vaccine.
Hmm.
A new guideline, which reportedly received bipartisan support, requires that all students under the age of 30 show either proof of vaccination or a signed affidavit of exemption before being allowed to come to class. Imagine having to go through that. Effective beginning spring semester 2012 for all students enrolled at both public and private colleges and universities, Texas, the mandate expands previous one expands the previous one enacted in 2009. It requires only students living on campus to get the shot. And even though all students still have the freedom to decline the vaccination as a matter of conscience or for religious reasons, many of them are not being told this by their schools and are just going along with it.
Ah.
Yeah. So, you know,
Though
the state, the entire state of Texas had only 34 reported cases of meningitis among young people between the age of 15 and 29 in 2009, Governor Perry, the Texas Medical Association, and several state senators expressed vehement support for the new bill, which further expands the government's reach into the personal health choices of Texans. Can I read the rest of it? Authored by Texas State Senator Wendy Davis.
It's Bill 1107. Is a companion bill to the earlier Jamie Sheinbaum Act of 2009, which was enacted beginning January 1st, 2010, in honor of Jamie Sheinbaum, a University of Texas student who developed meningococcal septicemia that ended up causing her to lose both her legs and all 10 of her fingers, according to reports. Oh, how terrible. But rather than continue to give students the option to evaluate the facts and decide for themselves whether or not to get the vaccine, both the Texas state government and the TMA have decided to force it on everyone, despite the fact that the condition is extremely rare. The National Vaccine Information Center also lists some very serious reported adverse events associated with the meningitis vaccine that include nerve damage, double vision, this deadly skin disease, Stevens-Johnson syndrome, and even death.
And this is from the vaccine.
Yeah, you know, that's not even from what they're trying to present.
That's not meningitis. This is right from the vaccine.
The whole charade harkens back to Governor Perry's 2007 executive order that mandated Gardasil vaccines for all Texas schoolgirls. This mandate was later repealed, but it appears as though Perry and others, vaccine pushers in Texas, are up to their dirty work once again, trying to force chemical injections on the young people of Texas. Boy, just be glad you don't live there. It's really scary.
Well, I wasn't going to mention Whitney Houston tonight, but there's an article here that says this. Whitney Houston, yet another victim of pharmaceutical drug industry.
Yes, she was given all those horrible prescription medications.
Yeah. It just says...
The regretful passing of American entertainment icon Whitney Houston marks yet another sad milestone in the devastating body count of the prescription drug industry. TMZ is now reporting that Whitney Houston was not found with illegal drugs, but prescription drugs that may have killed her or caused her to drown in the bathtub. She wasn't killed from drowning.
No, they said
decided.
That she actually was killed by the Xanax and stuff.
Houston had a plethora of sedatives, including lorazepam, Valium, Xanax, and a sleeping medication that was found in her hotel room. The prescription drugs were officially taken into the custody of the Beverly Hills Police Department, the website reported. An autopsy has yet to be performed, or we don't have the results of it anyway.
Whitney Houston was also taking Xanax, a psychiatric anxiety drug.
Anti-anxiety drug.
Psychiatric anti-anxiety
drug. Oh, and that's a horrible drug. Very powerful drug, very, very powerful.
According to Fox News, Houston's family members said that she was taking Xanax, a powerful psychotropic. As Natural News has reported many times, mind-altering drugs are known to cause erratic behavior and suicidal thoughts. Although Xanax is not an SSRI drug, its side effects include aggression, rage, hostility, twitches and tremors, and mania and agitation. An overdose of Xanax may cause dizziness, fainting, coma, or death.
Yeah.
Xanax is widely promoted throughout the DSM-IV, the Bible of Modern Psychiatry, that promotes the use of prescription and amphetamines to children. among other bizarre chemical recommendations.
Oh, the DSM-4, the Bible of modern psychiatry, yes.
Whitney Houston showed clear signs of pharmaceutical adverse effects. And Houston, who struggled with drugs and alcohol abuse in her later life, made a bizarre appearance just two evenings before her death at a pre-Grammy party. Singer seemed to be wasted and moody as she exited the clubs past midnight, according to a witness. She reacted angrily to the security guards trying to get her into the car and started cussing at them out. Although the superstar smiled when fans approached her for autographs, she would get moody again in a split second. The observer said it was sad because her fans noticed that she was really shaky and she left the venue. When she left the venue, she definitely was not in control of herself. And this is the behavior of a person who is using either prescription psychiatric drugs or recreational drugs. Mm-hmm. This was observed with Houston on multiple occasions as very strong evidence that these drugs were altering her brain function, thereby radically altering her personality.
People thought because they were prescription and prescribed that they were okay.
Well, they don't realize
how toxic some of those drugs are.
Yeah, and the same thing happened to Heath Ledger.
Yep.
Was killed by
pharmaceuticals. What's her name, Anna Nicole Smith?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Elvis Presley? He had pharmaceuticals?
Oh, yeah, sure. So many of them.
Yep.
It's time to start helping drug addicts rather than throwing them behind bars. I agree with that. Famous singer Tony Bennett echoes this call. An urgent outspoken plea made last night, Tony Bennett called for the decriminalization of drugs so that drug addicts can seek help legally and compassionately without being thrown behind bars and marginalized by society. First it was Michael Jackson, then Amy Winehouse, now Whitney Houston, said Bennett. And I'd like every person in this room to campaign to legalize drugs.
Well, I think that
it doesn't mean that National News and Tony Bennett support the recreational use of such drugs. I am 100% against recreational use, and I don't use such drugs myself. But I also understand that drug use is a behavioral and chemical addiction, not a criminal act. And a solution is found in decriminalizing drugs, regulating their distribution like alcohol, and offering treatment, addiction, recovery, and nutritional consultation programs for those suffering from drug addiction. That's true. Drug users are not criminals. They are addicts. And that's the end of that, folks. And the end of our show. And I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. And Lila and I are...
Yes.
Happy you were with us.
Yeah, we're glad we could bring you a little more news than we did last night. But
yeah.
If you didn't catch our program last night, we had terrific guests, and I hope you can catch it on our archive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Leo will be talking to you tomorrow night, and I'll be back on Friday when we talk with George.
Yep. So thank you for listening, and
enjoy the rest of your evening.
And have a pleasant evening. Yep.
Night.